Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
He is seen coming down the escalators of the Southern Cross Railway Station on CCTV footage. He gestures to the little girl to stay there, and she's 3 years old, and then he leaves her. She's wearing a pumpkin patch jacket. They called him Pumpkin for that reason.
In this episode of Crimes NZ, we're looking at a case that shocked the world and involved an international manhunt. I'm Jesse Mulligan, and I'm joined by former detective Simon Scott, who was in charge of the so-called Pumpkin case, which kicked off when a 3-year-old girl was found abandoned in Melbourne in 2007.
It was the most memorable case. It's kind of overtook my life there for a while, but in the end we got a really good result.
So for a bit of background, who was Nyan Ju?
I think his surname is pronounced Schwer. He was a purported martial arts expert. And I think he'd been to New Zealand a couple of times, but came to New Zealand in 1996. He actually applied for refugee status. Subsequently, he became a resident in 1998. He was heavily involved in Chinese media, and he had a martial arts group, I think, that he trained. Anan Lu came to New Zealand in 2002. She was an English language student. They met in December of 2002 because Nyan Schwer had put an ad in the Chinese Times, I think it was, for a flatmate. Anan Lu answered that ad and moved in. They began a relationship, and she fell pregnant in March, April 2003. And they had a little girl, Pumpkin, in December of that year. They lived in various different addresses across Auckland, but in 1997 they were living in the address in Keystone Avenue.
And Nyan Ju, as we will learn, was abusive. In fact, ended up killing Anan. But it sounded like their relationship went particularly, well, his abusive behaviour started after the birth of that child.
Yeah, I think it was quite a sad relationship. Consistent with a lot of domestic violence related relationships. It was ongoing. You know, some of the assaults were quite serious. He was imprisoned for one particular assault, and there was an incident where she'd fled to Wellington and without his knowing where she was, and he found her and travelled to Wellington and broke into the house, and there was quite a violent incident there as well. So it was a violent relationship, and we think that the issue was that he wanted a boy, and the first child, Pumpkin, obviously was a girl. He wanted a boy to have a son for himself. So, and that didn't occur.
When she was in Wellington, it sounded like she struck up a bit of a relationship with the man she'd rented a room from.
Yeah, I think they became friends rather than a relationship. We were never 100% sure how far that friendship went, but she certainly was living in a house with another Chinese male in Wellington, in Johnsonville, in Wellington.
Who ended up chasing Jouet away when he came down. It sounded like quite a confrontation.
Yeah, it was a significant confrontation. I think it was the middle of the night, and Schwer tried to break in. Song, I think the guy's name was, he confronted him and chased him down the road, and Schwer went back to Auckland after that.
So that was in 2007. That was July, I think, July, August. Mm. What happened in September, 11th of September 2007?
They ended up getting back together, obviously, which, you know, it was a sad decision in itself. But they were living in the Keystone Ave address. There was another couple who lived, it was a normal suburban house. There's another Chinese couple living in the back of the address. And Pumpkin had been at kindergarten during the day and Shui had been at work. Anan Lu, the last time she is seen is on Tuesday the 11th of September at the address by the flatmates. She made a purchase actually from a local store, and then the flatmates, I think it was about 8 o'clock at night, went out for a walk for a couple of hours. And we think it is at that time that Shui murdered her in the house. He strangled her with his yellow tie. He wrapped her up in his dressing gown and placed her in the boot of his Honda Rafaga vehicle, which was at the property.
And then did what?
We think he parked the car on the street, and that's where it stayed. He actually did a couple of things. He went at about 20 past 12 the next morning. He actually went to an ASB vault and took something out of a safe deposit box, which we have CCTV footage for. And then he was later stopped in Roscommon Road and Wirree Road by police because he was driving erratically, and they spoke to him about his driving. He hadn't been drinking, and so they, I think they warned him and let him go. But basically the next morning he took Pumpkin back to kindergarten and went to work. And then the next day, which was the Thursday, he visits a travel agent and buys a ticket, a return ticket to Melbourne. And he talks to the travel agent about whether, if he bought a ticket for his three-year-old daughter, whether he could get it refunded. So in the morning, he just buys the one ticket, and it was for a flight that night at 6 o'clock. And then he went back about 3 o'clock and purchased a ticket for Pumpkin. And then they go out to the airport. They take the a Honda Fit motor vehicle, which was Anan Lu's vehicle. They park it at the airport. It's a Qantas flight, I think, and they flew to Melbourne. There, they go into Melbourne City. They start a hotel. The next morning, he gets up and goes to another travel agent. And he talks to the travel agent about maybe going to South Africa, maybe going to London. The travel agent talks to them about going to, I think it's Vancouver or San Diego, but he settles on planning a trip to Los Angeles. So he flies, he plans a trip for the Saturday, Melbourne to Los Angeles. So then on the Saturday morning, he gets up, he takes his daughter Pumpkin to the Southern Cross Railway Station about 8 a.m. in the morning. He is seen coming down the escalators of the Southern Cross Railway Station on CCTV footage. He goes round to the side of the escalator. He gestures to the little girl to stay there, and she's 3 years old. And then he leaves her. He goes back up the escalators and then goes out to the airport and boards a flight.
Man.
To... actually, what happened was that flight transitioned through Auckland. So he went back to Auckland, stayed a few hours, and then I think it was 3 o'clock on the Saturday, he flies off to LA.
Just to imagine what it would take to leave your own daughter at a railway station and walk off.
Well, it was quite powerful evidence to show to the jury, you know, that the circumstances, what circumstances would make you do that.
Yeah. Mm. And then she was found.
The little girl, well, she was quickly found. She was standing there all alone. And she was approached by a passerby. She was actually approached by an elderly Chinese couple who spoke to her for a few moments. Then they went away because she looked scared and she looked hungry. Mm. And they came back and gave her an apple. And then there was quite a commotion. Authorities were alerted that she was there. And she was distraught. You know, obviously communication was difficult for her, and so they were caring for her, but they had no idea where she was from. They had no idea what her name was. She was wearing a pumpkin patch jacket, and they called her Pumpkin for that reason. And then it took some time to find out anything about her. And at one point, she says plane, or she says airport, or she says a word that directs them to make inquiries out at the airport, out at Melbourne's airport. So authorities out there spent hours and hours and hours going through CCTV footage trying to find both Schwer and Pumpkin. And eventually they do. They do find them on CCTV footage. It was sometime on Sunday, maybe Sunday evening, it might have been 5 or 6 o'clock. They were able to then cross-reference those images to their identities. And then I think it was about 11:30 on the Sunday night, Interpol Canberra emailed Interpol New Zealand to Wellington outlining that Pumpkin had been abandoned. They were able to identify who she was, and that Nyan Schwer had gone to LA. Now, at that stage, he was through the border. And he also gave a false name of the hotel on his boarding card into the United States.
Yeah.
So we weren't going to be able to find, or it was going to be very difficult for us to find him right from the get-go.
Guess now is around the time that you get involved, Simon.
Yeah, well, there was quite a bit of a delay through, that was through Monday. The addresses that we were given were wrong. And then later the Keystone Avenue address came up later in the morning, and then police started to visit that address. So we visited that address a couple of times, and then on the evening, police find a note in that property saying, we have gone to Wellington to pick up my wife. And then they also find an unused handbag, which had her driver's license and other credit cards and things like that in it. So I don't actually start my work until the next morning, which was, I think it's Tuesday the 18th. I was asked to lead the investigation about 7:30 in the morning. And so there was quite a bit of work to do. It was already quite a big media event. I remember it being mentioned in the news during the weekend. Chinese news media had already knew about it through the Monday, and they were already outside the address. They'd visited the address. So it was already a significant media event. But we wanted to do things right, so we decided that we wanted to do a search warrant. We had to apply for a search warrant, which took about, 6 hours. I think the rules have changed on how you get search warrants these days, but it took about 6 hours to do that. We had to get a team together. That team didn't meet till about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And by the time we had the search warrants in place, because we all wanted a search warrants for both cars and also Keystone Ave, so it was important that we could make sure we got those search warrants so we could have, you know, seize the evidence that we'd find in those places.
And I should point out at this point that the body is in the boot of the car, which is what, outside the address?
Yes, the body of Ananlu was in the Honda Rafaga in the boot. And I must say, you know, that is on me. I made certain decisions during that day that, meant that the body was not found, I guess. But the very least thing we should have done is put tape around it, and, that's on me. Just one other point, there was a mention of whether people didn't smell the body, body. There was no smell with her body. It was to do with ear movement and how the boot was sealed. So there was no smell to, I guess, alert people to the fact that the body was in the boot.
Yeah. At the time, that was a fairly big story, I think, that the boot hadn't been checked, right? That must have been pretty hard for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You've got to take those things on the chin, though. It's, when you're leading those investigations, sometimes you don't get things right. And, you know, I certainly didn't get that right at that time. But it was a beginning of the inquiry. It was the first day. And it was a large investigation over three different countries. And, you know, we had a lot of work to do.
So you eventually do discover the body. Do you remember that moment?
Yes, I do. It was the next morning. We'd had a lot of staff to come on, so we were ramping up the investigation. I don't know how many staff came on the next morning, but we wanted to be really careful about the investigation of that car because it was his car, it was locked. And so we wanted to make sure that any forensic evidence we had or was there, we could obtain. So the guys were really careful, they took their time, and then they popped the boot and the body was in there. So it was significant, and, it was a pretty important moment for the investigation.
So time to start looking for Nayan Jue, and where do you look?
He was in the States. We knew that through immigration and obviously his travel records. But what we wanted to do was start the process to extradite him back to New Zealand. And what we needed to do was put together essentially a prosecution file in New Zealand for murder that we could then, through the mutual assistance treaty that we have with the United States, approach their authorities to essentially have a warrant to arrest signed in the United States. And so that process took probably a week or so, but it went through Internal Affairs through to their Justice Department, and then it went to a local court in California where a judge reviewed the evidence, and then he signed a warrant to arrest, and so he was then a wanted person in the United States.
And that's a pretty interesting story in its own right. You attracted the attention of some TV producers.
The US Marshals were then offered to us as the right group in the United States to have this job to find him, because they aren't investigators. They find people. They find fugitives. And so we were put on to the U.S. Marshal's office, one of the U.S. Marshal's offices in California. That's one of the first things they said we should do is that we got put on. Swear was put on the 100 most wanted list and went on their website, and they suggested he should go on America's Most Wanted. The producers there did a great job. I think it was a 6-minute video of the case, and it aired in, I think it was October or November. We didn't actually get a lot of information from that, but it was aired again on the 28th of December between Christmas and New Year. We got several leads, and one was in Houston, Texas, where he was staying in a boarding house or a hotel, I think it was a hotel, and the manager of that hotel recognized him, and then he knew he was driving a car, and it was a Bluebird, I think, a vehicle, and he had the registration number, and he called authorities and alerted them to Swear being in or near the hotel. But by the time authorities came to visit, he'd gone, and he kind of smelt something was up, so he left. But we had that, the significant thing for that is that we had his registration number, and then that registration number was pinged by their automatic registration plate readers throughout the highways, through the bottom part of the United States, through Mississippi and Alabama. I always remember it was Biloxi, I think, and Mobile. Came up, and we'd get these notifications from the marshal saying this had happened and that had happened. Sometimes they were related to this and sometimes they weren't. And at one time he was actually stopped by a state trooper on a motorway, and he was asleep in his car, and the state trooper spoke to him, and he said that he was just tired and he'd had a sleep. And so then the state trooper let him drive away, and then he ran the plate, and the plate was wanted, which wasn't helpful.
Was he eventually caught then?
So what we really were keen on was doing a media release through the ethnic Chinese newspapers through the bottom half of the United States. And Noreen Hegarty, who was our media person at Auckland City District Police, organised that. They created a media piece with his photo, and that was spread through Chinese media and through that part of the United States. It was seen by a group of Chinese nationals in Chamblee in Atlanta, Georgia. They said, that guy is, we've been speaking to him because he wanted to buy a dry cleaning business. Mm. And so they called him because they had his number and organized for him to come back to their address to talk about the dry cleaning business, and they had a whole bunch of them in this room.
Wow.
And they let him, he came in, they shut the door behind him, and basically they jumped him and hogtied him, I think it was with his own pants. And then they called the Chamblee police, and the Chamblee police came to see what was going on, and I don't think any of them really could speak English very well, and so the police didn't know what they were talking about. And they were pointing to this his photo in a Chinese newspaper, which was all in Chinese, and so they didn't sort of work out what was going on until they went back to the police station. They searched the records and found him, found that he had he was wanted for murder in New Zealand. He was arrested and appeared in court a day later.
Was flown back to New Zealand with a couple of officers and then put on trial. And how was that trial, as you remember? Were you confident going into it?
Yeah, I think we were fairly confident. We'd actually gathered quite a bit of evidence against him. There was forensic evidence, there was circumstantial evidence, but there was also similar fact evidence, you know, that he had beaten Anunu before. There was charges had already been laid. He'd been found guilty before. He'd gone to jail over it, and so it built a fairly good case. We think Aaron Perkins was the Crown solicitor and did a great job with presenting the evidence, and I thought in the end we did a good job of putting the case together and putting the matter in front of the all woman jury. There's 12 women on the jury,
and he denied it, by the way.
Yeah, he did. He did. When the verdict was entered, he stood up and said unfair, and it wasn't him, which I'll always remember.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of work. There was a lot of work put into that over three different countries. There was 50 to 60 staff working on the homicide inquiry in New Zealand. You know, we had great cooperation with different services. The marshals were great to deal with. We had, you know, we were dealing with our police liaison officer in Washington. It was Sandra Manison, and the police liaison officers in China as well. It was an awesome inquiry to be a part of, and some great work by staff on the inquiry. And you know, I think we ended up. It wasn't a great start, but. It was a really, really good investigation, and in the end it was, you know, we're really happy with the result.
And what happened to Pumpkin?
Pumpkin was put into the custody of her grandmother, who was from China, and her grandmother, we built a really good relationship with the grandmother. We got her we got her number early in the inquiry and contacted her and updated her with what was going on. She came to New Zealand, and there was a whole issue about custody of Pumpkin. And in the end, the grandmother got custody of her. They live in China. I think she's still living with the family. I don't have a update. I think she'd be 18 now, and I think I used the word she was thriving, and I think she continued to thrive in China.
You've been listening to Crimes NZ, hosted by me, Jesse Mulligan. This week, I was joined by former detective Simon Scott. Simon, thanks for your time. An amazing team goes into producing the Crimes NZ podcast: Melita Tull, Charlie Drever, Sam Hollis, and Ayanna Piper-Helian. This episode was edited by Grant Walker and Liz Garten. Tim Watkin is executive producer of RNZ Podcasts. Crimes NZ is available on all good podcasting apps: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Google. It's even on YouTube now, if that's how you'd prefer to listen. Remember to follow the series so you don't miss any new episodes. And look out for other great podcasts from RNZ, like Know My Town, quick listens which explain how some of Aotearoa's best loved places got their names.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.